Hello and welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 309 for Agent Carter, season 2, episode 3, Better Angels. My name is Danielle and I'm going to be your superfan host today. Before we jump into anything, I want to give you our contact information. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you're so inclined, you can join our Facebook group. You can find us on Facebook at Rewatchables Rewinders. Try saying that like 5 times fast. Before I introduce our panel of hosts, I do want to give 2 notes. One about our previous episodes that were a little bit delayed. They should be out, obviously, if you're listening to this, they are out by now. That would make the most sense, unless we are time traveling. We apologize for the delay in those. We had some technical issues that we needed to sort out, but they're out now, and we hope that you can enjoy them and maybe just like binge listen to us. That would be fun, right? And also, speaking of time travel, there will be no Endgame spoilers in this episode of Rewatchable. As much as we are bursting at the seams to talk about Endgame, we will not spoil it here because we know this episode will be going up, I believe, within like a week or before the week mark of Endgame coming out. And we don't want to spoil anyone if you haven't, for some reason, had a chance to go to the theater and see it. That being said, just this episode of Rewatchable will be spoiler-free. The rest of them are fair game because there's a lot to discuss, and I know we are raring to do that. So, those 2 things being said, I want to introduce you to the rest of our panel for today. We have superfan Karen and newbies Ariana and Nassim. Welcome, ladies.
Hi.
Hi.
So we're going to start this week off with fun facts. Again, they're not going to be Endgame related, so no need to skip through. Let's start with you, Nassim. What is your fun fact for the week?
My fun fact is that I am currently at the 16-year-old point in my American life because I just got my driver's license. So I'm very, very proud of myself.
That's awesome.
Congratulations. And
I was like 21 before I got mine, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm 23.
That's true. I think Kristen was older as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think like it was, I'm just really scared of killing children. Like that is my number one fear.
I get
that's
it.
That's a healthy fear to have.
Yeah, that's a good fear to have.
Everyone says that if you're afraid of it, it's not going to happen. So I hope that's true. But it turns out that automatic is so much easier to drive than, what is it, standard manual?
Yeah, manual.
Yeah, manual. I used to drive that in Paraguay. So, and I used to try to drive that because it was very stressful for me. Like the learning process was very stressful. So then when I tried an automatic car, I was like, oh man, I got this. And it's been nice. I feel like a real adult or a 16-year-old. We'll see. Now I just need a car because I have a license, but nothing much else.
I mean, that's helpful to have a car.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Congratulations. Ariana, what's your fun fact for the week?
I didn't have one, but now after Nassim's story, I was thinking about how yesterday someone like hit my car with, I don't know how, while it was parked.
Oh, no.
It was really annoying. They didn't leave a note. That's rude. That's not a fun fact, though. let me think of one. I can't think of one.
I mean,
I guess I just have this depressing fact.
Maybe it's the beginning of a story of you getting revenge.
I thought you were going to say beginning of like a love story and then you were just like revenge.
Oh, it can be a love story, but I don't want her to have a love story with someone who doesn't even know.
That's true.
I don't want a love story with someone who bumps cars and doesn't leave notes.
Maybe there's a reason. Maybe they were rushing to the hospital because their friend is dying.
Yeah.
Maybe
that just got more
depressing. And
maybe they didn't notice. Hopefully they didn't notice.
Maybe they just gave birth to a child and they're going to come back with the baby and be like, you're now the godmother because I destroyed your car.
It was also right in front of UCLA's law school. So it was probably a law student who knew, well, I guess it's not against the law. It's just discourteous. Sorry, my fun fact is terrible. Yours is great, Nassim. It's
fine. You're my future. Oh, no. You're future me.
I mean, that is better than hitting a child, so.
Yes, maybe.
Sorry, Ariana.
We think, my friends and I talk all the time about how, like, in the future, our children, if they exist, you know, if the world doesn't explode before then, we'll be talking about how you drove those death traps. Like, there was just all these millions of people just, like, driving these machines that can murder down the street.
Yeah.
Like, and there's probably a lot of people who should not be driving. Like, I feel like we give out these licenses too willy-nilly.
Oh, God. There's this place, which I will not name because I don't want to give them bad rep, but I went to that city and I was getting my license. It was another country. And then they were like, I was watching this policeman give this kid license application. And so, no, it was a test. It was the written test. So he's like, okay, so this is the written test. It has these questions. You're going to mark, it's like multiple choice, so mark the right answer. And he was like, okay. And then he pulled out another page and he's like, this is the driving test. So you're going to see like turns, like signals before turning, and you're going to mark yes or no. And then you're going to bring it to me and then I'll give you he'll give you your license. I was like, oh, this explains why people drive like that here. There was no driving test. It was just a piece of paper.
That's crazy.
That is. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that. Karen, what is your fun fact for this week?
Okay. My fun fact for this week is that Arusha and the Song of Death comes out on Tuesday, and I started reading it and it's already very good and I want to read more of it. This is, the first book was Arusha and the End of Time, and it's about Indian mythology, and it's very good, written by Roshni Chakshi, and it's part of Rick Riordan Presents books. So it's got like a fun middle grade vibe to it, but it's got mythology and a lot of action and a lot of humor. And it's the book that's come the closest to feeling like reading Percy Jackson again for the first time. And I will take anything I can get that will give me that because I love Percy Jackson. So if that sounds at all interesting to anybody, please read it.
That sounds tailor-made for you. Not going to lie.
Yeah, it really is. It's super awesome. It's about the Pandavi brothers, except they're all sisters. So it's also got like lots of kick-ass young women. I think they're like 12. So I was going to say ladies, but they're pretty young still.
Not quite ladies.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, my fun fact for the week actually is also slightly book-related. Since we finished the season finale, the season one finale of Agent Carter, I've gone back to this book. It's called Agent Carter, Season One Declassified, or Agent Carter Declassified. And it goes through a lot of the making of Agent Carter. And it goes through like the different episodes. It goes through a lot of the character things. And I wish that I had read it while we were recording on season one. I wish I had that foresight, because there was a lot of really interesting information in there, such as they were talking about how in the pilot they regretted putting in like the period joke, or like the period, like Agent Carter got out of work because she had her period, or like some of those very slightly uncomfortable but like female issue kind of things, and how they felt rushed, or like they couldn't do a lot of character stuff within the first three or four episodes because they were trying to get this story out. And so they said that they were only able to do a lot of the character and relationship things like from episodes three or four moving forward, which we actually caught onto during our rewatch. So it was nice to get a little bit more context behind all that kind of stuff. And when I reached the conclusion, which was yesterday morning, when I was already slightly emotional about Marvel things, it made me start crying because they are like, we have a plan for all of these things beyond like season one of Agent Carter and all of these things that we want to see. And Haley Atwell was like, yeah, I'm in this for life. And then I just started crying. So if you would like a good cry, but also if you would like a really good insight into Agent Carter Season 1, I highly recommend you check out Agent Carter Season 1 Declassified. I haven't gotten season two yet. It's in my Amazon cart. It's a slightly expensive book, which is why I haven't gotten it yet, but I'm interested in checking that out as well. So all Agent Carter all the time for me. If that's not on brand, I don't know what is.
It does sound really interesting though.
Yeah, it's really cool. And it's a like a coffee table looking book. So it's bigger. And it has just like gorgeous photos and stuff in it. It's beautiful.
I love that. My only issue is that I don't have a coffee table. So like, that's fair. Don't really know where to put all of my, cause I have a lot of Percy Jackson ones too. And in the Harry Potter books, like the bigger illustrated ones, and I just don't know what to do with them.
Do you have like a side table by your couch?
I mean, we kind of have tables in front of our couch, but
you have those IKEA tables.
Yeah. I also don't really want to pile books on them because there's books piled everywhere else around my apartment.
That's fair. It kind of feels like you're going to be killed by books when you walk into their living room. Slightly.
There are worse ways to go, I guess.
This is true. All right, let's jump into our main discussion for today. We will be talking about season 2, episode 3, Better Angels. Before we talk about our discussion points themselves, Ariana has written a recap, which goes, in this episode, all of the men in Peggy's life are back and in equal quantities, both more and less useless than ever. Jack is back, but he's making bad friends and losing the good. Wilkes is following Peggy around like a sad ghost, and Howard's halting his cowboy production to head down to Peru. Meanwhile, Whitney Frost is absorbing bad guys like she's baby Harry Potter and or a retcon dancing snake gymnast. So yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up. I'm not sure about the dancing snake gymnast, but I like the imagery there. Let's jump into our discussion points. The first is immediately following last week's episode where we had that big explosion at Aes Sedain. So the SSR is kind of following up on what happened. They go to Wilkes' house and it seems like someone is trying to frame Wilkes as a Russian spy, that someone being Aes Sedain. But Peggy knows he doesn't have the range to be a spy from Russia. Did it before Peggy kind of chimed in to say like, oh no, he couldn't be a spy. These things couldn't be his. Was anyone on board with Wilkes perhaps being a Russian spy?
No, I think... you know, it was obvious from the beginning that it was racial profiling. And also, I just think it's kind of hilarious that they think that Russians would hire a black man to be their spy. I'm sorry, but Russians at this
But time have you seen the Americans?
If no,
they
more.
Did. And the Russians did frequently.
They did?
They tried to infiltrate. Yeah, because, like in the Americans, they talk about how, like their main American contact is an African American guy.
Well, that's scummy because they
clearly
they
has a lot to be angry racist. About.
And so like they're just using people. Oh wow. Okay. I did not know that.
I didn't either. That's really interesting. Yeah, it kind of seemed really weird when they're like taking these things out of the baseboard. And it's like, oh, I just found this gun laying around.
I love how Peggy immediately calls him out on that. Like, really, you think it's going to be that easy? Like, if he's a Russian spy, you think he's just letting these things lay around?
Mm-hmm.
Because she actually uses her brain.
What? No.
Unheard of.
Unheard of. Yeah, so everyone is thinking that Wilkes is a Russian spy. Even the newspapers are printing about it, even though the SSR hasn't really put that report out, which we kind of find out what's going on with that later. They still don't really know what's going on with Wilkes, but they definitely don't know what's going on with the Zero Matter. And so who better to talk about something like scientific than Howard Stark, who is apparently making movies now about comic books, which was fun. But I forgot that Howard came back in this episode, and it made me really happy to see him. I'm not sure if anyone else had that reaction as well.
He's really great, and I wish that they could just have him in every episode. But I guess Dominic Cooper thinks that he's hot stuff. Because I feel like he adds so much. He is really, like, the main comedic relief. And I love watching, like, how he... respects Peggy, and they also have like this like kind of weird, like with all three of them, like him and Jarvis and Peggy, they have like this weird like little annoying little brother relationship.
I love his tropical shirts too. He just looks great in so many colors. Makes me happy.
There's something oddly comforting about Howard Stark. I don't quite know what it is, but I think part of it is like he's so intelligent and you feel like whatever problem you have, he's going to help you solve it. So whenever Peggy goes to him, I'm like, okay, everything's going to be okay. But at the same time, he's also just so chill and he's not worried about anything. And I like people like that because I worry about everything. And if I were around Howard Stark, he'd either drive me absolutely crazy or he would calm me down. I think it's 50-50 at this point.
Yeah, probably.
Both. You never know what he's really going to be like any given moment.
I mean, I wouldn't say he's not worried about anything because we see him hopped up on caffeine a little bit later. I think that's him.
But like, even when he's worried, he's like excitable. Like he's like, this is amazing. I want to figure this out. He's, you know, Peggy's obviously very emotionally invested and very worried. Whereas I feel like he's almost like, I have to figure out this problem. Like, I can't rest until I solve this. It's kind of a different kind of worry.
Totally fair. In addition to be helping with the science stuff, which we'll get to in a second, Howard immediately kind of solves one of Peggy's questions or unknown mysteries she's had up until this point. And that is the purpose of that pin that they found, both in Wilkes's apartment and as well as with Dottie when Dottie was trying to steal it from a vault. And so the pin is for a all boys club. And because of course, and so obviously what better way to get into an all boys club than to have Howard kind of break in sort of and invite a bunch of lady friends, including Peggy in a dress that I don't think she ever would have worn otherwise, but also looks fantastic in. I love the Howard and Jarvis takeover of the club. It makes me really happy every time I see it. And why shouldn't all boys clubs be infiltrated like that? I don't know. How was this a good idea in terms of them sneaking into that club? Or do you think there was a better way to do it that wasn't as flashy? What did you guys make of this plan?
I think it worked, but I did feel like maybe it was meant to be this big, like, female takeover, like, ooh. But really, the girls were just there to kind of be props to distract the guys, like sitting on their laps and stuff. So, like, I don't know. I kind of was hoping that he was bringing women who, I don't know, he mentioned the suffragettes. I was like, oh my God, is he bringing the suffragettes? So now they're going to have all these debates or something. But no, they were just there to sit on these old men's laps. So, I mean, I guess you can't expect any more from Howard Stark, but I had my hopes.
That would have been so cool, though, if they were, like, debating the men and, like, making them flustered that way. That would have been a lot more powerful. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I would have liked that better as well. I didn't think of it either, and now I'm kind of ashamed that I didn't. I kind of assumed all of those women are actresses, maybe?
They're production assistants.
Production assistants.
That's their official title.
I'm sorry. Yes.
That's what Jarvis said.
So how many pool parties and boys club infiltrations have you participated in?
Exactly zero.
Okay. Sure. This is not.
I would love to be a production assistant on Howard Stark's movies. Just hang out at the pool all day.
Drink Bloody Marys with him. Or
yes. They seem very relaxed. It looks like they've got life made. So
this is definitely something to keep an eye on in general. I want to talk about kind of what she does in the club in a second, but obviously this club is slightly important because all of the big male players we've seen so far are members of this club, or we see them walking through this club. We see the owner of Aes Sedain who's running for office. All of those meetings with the men kind of making all of these big decisions were happening in the club. We see God, I can't remember his name. I'm just going to constantly refer to him as Red Foreman, the creepy guy or like the shifty guy that Jack is friends with. Like he takes him through the club and seems very obviously connected to it. And then there's also the outstanding question of why Dottie was interested in this club. Is this something that you are intrigued by moving forward? Is this something that you would like to see more of? Or are you slightly disappointed that we'll be focusing on, or at least bringing in a boys' club more than just on this occasion?
I'm disappointed that it's not more interesting than what we've seen so far.
Fair. It's just a bunch of white men sitting around.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully there's something like deeper to it, but they're just like in a lounge, like being old and drinking old people drinks.
I love when they were talking about that they like the male and pale and that Jarvis isn't even white enough for them because he's 1/6 Turkish. That was a really cute exchange.
I love that as well. That made me smile. Because when you think of Jarvis, like, I wouldn't expect him to be anything else.
A quintessential old-fashioned British man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So Peggy sneaks in, and she sneaks into that secret room that they have, which, of course, is in a library. They could get through it through a library. And she notices two newspapers on the table, both for the following day, but with different headlines on them. So obviously, blackmail is going on here, or high-level decision-making, I guess, where people at the newspaper are very obviously involved in this boys' club, which is not good. And so she's trying to place bugs all around the club. They don't work because apparently they have some sort of really good scientists on staff to make sure that bugs won't work there. So the mission is kind of for nothing. Except for the fact that like she sees the newspapers, but she can't even bring them back as evidence. So that's not great. And that does nothing to help her, I guess, relationship with Ariana's bae, Jack. So he flies out to California to both meet with a shifty guy, and I'm really sorry, I don't remember his name at the moment, to meet with him and kind of check in on this investigation and shut it down because shifty guy wants it shut down. And so Peggy's lack of evidence is not really helpful here. And I like Jack's reintroduction here because I find it really interesting that he's both carrot and stick, it feels to me. Like he goes from being very businesslike and acting like Sousa's superior and trying to shut things down. But then he also will ask about like Sousa's home life, or there are moments of that character that we knew from season 1 when they were all three like best friends. There are moments that kind of come through, just not often enough. Ariana, I want to know how you felt about Jack coming back in this capacity and how you feel about how his character is going so far this season, because I'm sure you have thoughts.
Okay, first of all, they're still best friends. They're just going through a little tiff.
My mistake, I apologize.
But, well, this was my favorite scene, so, and I guess I can talk about it later or talk about it now, but I got so excited when he came back because everything from his entrance to them just reacting to him, I feel like those three have such a great dynamic on this show, and I feel like you could really see it in their banter, and yeah, they have a weird dynamic, but it's fun. But I also thought it was just like, it was both sad and dumb that to me, it's so clearly like Jack still thinks he's their friend. He's like, yeah, don't you guys love me? And they're like, no, you lied to us. So yeah, to me, it seems like Jack still thinks that he's like, yeah, we're all friends. And they don't trust him anymore because he's doing shady things.
Yes, I was very frustrated with Jack in this episode, obviously. I think you're supposed to be. But thinking about that now, I think Peggy is very angry with him because she's hurt. I think she's hurt about how he trusted her before, and now he's kind of pulling that back. And I think Jack, unfortunately, is one of those people who does tend to think about himself first. And that doesn't make him, you know, a bad agent or anything, or even necessarily a bad friend. But at the moment, I don't think he's really seeing the whole picture. And Peggy is trying so hard to shove the whole picture in his face, and he just refuses to look at it. And I can understand why she's very upset with him. So it does also kind of make me sad.
I do think he's a bad agent and a bad person.
Really?
Like, his behavior is completely unjustifiable. He's took her off one case to put her on another one. And then when he felt like it didn't give him, because he kind of didn't want to be like overshadowed. And then after her case got more interesting, he brought her back because he didn't want her there. And that's, you know, he's in a position of leadership and he's not doing what's best for anybody in the situation. And he's letting himself be manipulated by some outside people who got him his job. And I think he's the worst person to be in a position of authority right now. He's good as a lackey because his tendencies towards being a jerk don't really have much power there, like in season one. But right now it's terrible. And I think Sousa is right and maybe pushing away a little bit from that. And I hope that, like, I hope Jack can come back, but I don't think that he should be forgiven for this because I think it's very unprofessional.
So you think that he is bringing her back because he thinks this case is interesting?
Well, I mean, there's what other people, there's other people involved and he's scared of stepping on their toes. But I do think that there is a part of him which just doesn't like Peggy being in, doing anything.
Well, yeah, we saw that last week.
Good, yeah.
But I felt like in the opening entrance, he's like, you guys are being dumb. Can we just close this?
I don't know. I feel like he's just saying that. I really don't trust him. I think he's making up all these excuses because he doesn't know what to do. He's in over his head, but he also doesn't have the decency to properly respect Peggy's position and Sousa's position and, you know, let them do their work and, you know, be accountable for his own mistakes.
So it feels like he knows that they're on to something, but he also doesn't want to get in trouble with, thanks to Karen, Shifty guy's name is Vernon Masters. So he doesn't want to get in trouble with him. So he's trying to downplay the fact that he knows Sousa and Peggy are onto something and he knows that they could solve it if they really wanted to or if he lets them do it. But he's afraid of Vernon Masters.
Yeah, and that's very bad. He should not be leading anyone if that's the way that he's going to handle things.
I think the one redeeming thing here is he does very clearly feel some guilt or some like hesitation about what he's doing for Vernon Masters. He's still doing it, unfortunately, and I do think that is a mark against him. But I still think like if he has some guilt, some trepidation, then there must be a little voice in his head that's encouraging him to be better.
I don't get why everyone likes him so much.
Because he's interesting and fun. And I don't think he's being cool, but I also don't think he's like this evil person. And I think that we can trust his point of view because they do show his ugly parts. It's not like he's hiding something from us. We're omniscient here.
He just makes bad decisions, like handing over the footage of the Zero Matter to Vernon Masters.
Yeah. Also, like, he's not 100% wrong at the beginning. Like, yes, he's following Vernon Masters because he's being greedy. But also, like, he is partly right. Peggy didn't fully do the work. Like, she's just all of the evidence points to this guy being a Russian asset. They know that they've just dealt with the Russian asset. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, but I'm just following my gut because like we had a nice kiss. And he's like, okay, that's cute. where's your evidence? Well, I don't have any. So you went in there and you didn't find anything. No, I saw it, but I couldn't bring it. Okay, Peggy. Like, and
I still kind of feel like that's on Jack, though, not believing his agent, who very clearly has gone through this before and was right before. Like, her instincts are solid.
Yes, yeah. No. If he was being smarter, he would trust her because he knows her. And from what we saw last year, and how what's his face was always like, trust your gut. But she also, from a logical perspective, which is what he's going with because he's being selfish and he wants to please Vernon, she isn't bringing him enough.
Yeah, I think that's valid. You can't go off of gut or instinct alone. And she did fail in retrieving any sort of evidence. So I think he is in a very difficult place here. And I do think while he should have given her more of a benefit of a doubt, that he's not entirely wrong in just being like, I can't do anything. Like, we're done here. This is the evidence. This is what's here. We can't, like, this is it. After all of this kind of happens, after she goes to the club, after she's supposed to be on a flight on the way home to New York, which obviously I don't think any of us ever thought that was actually going to happen. Peggy is back, I think, at Howard's, or she's walking by desks and we kind of see it then, but then they notice it when they're back at Howard's place or the place that she is staying at, and objects are floating next to Peggy, which obviously is not great. And so Howard is on the case and trying to sort of explain it to her what's going on or what he thinks is going on and explain it to us at the same time. So I'm going to try to unpack that. So please jump in with questions or if you think I'm wrong, because there's weird things about Zero Matter that we obviously don't know. But basically, Peggy has been sort of exposed to the Zero Matter, but not to the extent of her turning into a frozen dead person. I think there was a difference in the fact that, like, things weren't floating at every part around her. It was only like the one side and something with the degrees, where it was clear, at least to Howard, that it wasn't her that was physically infected or like personally affected by the Zero Matter, that there was something else around her causing these things to happen.
Okay, so that was Wilkes then. It wasn't her.
Yes, I think so. Because he was kind of following her around like a puppy dog, basically yelling at her in silence to see him.
Because that, I was like, I get that this reveal is more important, but also I don't want Peggy to die. So can mm-hmm. we clear that up?
Yeah, they should be more. The science in this season, because it's very sciency with something that is not actually real, can get a little convoluted or confusing. And so I do think that they should have made it explicitly clear that Peggy wasn't going to die. I think she asked at some point if she's going to like freeze, and Howard said no, maybe. But yes, so the reason why things are floating around Peggy is because Wilkes is following her around. And by the way, Wilkes isn't dead, which I don't think anyone, did anyone here think he was actually dead? I think my first go around, I thought he might have been. But I
was just surprised that Peggy wasn't really mourning him properly. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was talking about it, but I didn't really feel much emotion. So that kind of hinted at them not wanting to waste screen time on that because he was just going to come back. So that made me assume that he was going to come back.
I mean, I feel like she spent the whole episode mourning him.
Yeah, I thought she was super sad about
it. I felt like she was guilty, but it didn't seem to me like a very...
And like, she knew this guy for like one day.
Yeah.
But he was so cute and charming.
Like, they were... Yeah. They low-key went on a date. Like,
they got donuts.
That's a big thing. That's a big step.
So I want to talk about Wilkes and kind of where he is at this point. He's not dead, obviously, but he's not completely alive because he's not corporeal. Something with the Zero Matter affected his being in that he exists on like a different sort of like range of light on the spectrum or something. And so Howard, because obviously Howard's into movies now, so Howard knows everything about movie making. He knows how to develop film and kind of goes through why he thinks using that process will help on Wilkes. Sprays him with something so that we can see him. Sprays his vocal cords so the vocal cords are able to be seen and then actually heard, because science. And then we have Wilkes standing there. So at this point, Wilkes has been killed and then kind of brought back, but brought back in the capacity of like a silent person who sort of has agency, but not really. And the context for me saying that is because in season one, one of the big complaints was the lack of diversity in the cast. And so they added Wilkes in season two. Does what is going on with him play okay? Or does it feel slightly off in that they're doing this to the, like, the one diverse person that they added to the cast? Does it feel like he's being sidelined, or does he have more agency, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask.
I hate 95% of everything about this character, and I just wish they would have made him white, like, because they're failing so badly in so many ways. It's infuriating.
What about it is, I mean, if you can boil it down to like a couple of things, what about it irks you most?
Just like as a character himself, I had so many issues with him in the last two episodes. In this episode, he was fine, but he was also like sad and non-corporeal. So that's its like own issues. But like in the first two episodes, like in terms of like feminism, I feel like he was incredibly weird and aggressive towards getting Peggy to like go on this date with him when she was like just trying to get work stuff. And I always hate when that's like a plot point. It really is annoying. And also it made no like sense, all the places he's dragging her to. But then like also like from a POC standpoint, like he's such an Uncle Tom, and it's like infuriating in that way. And he just reminds me of like so many, and I guess that's is like a very common thing, that there is a lot of like POC who get to positions of power because they work so hard to try and please white people. And that just reminded me a lot of people like in my own life that I've seen who do that. So I just feel like he wasn't written as like very super positive representation in the beginning, but he also bears the burden of being the only person, so he kind of has to do all of these things. But then like to kill him and then like you said make him like now he's gonna be a ghost, that's cool. Like I just wish sometimes no representation is better. Well, I would say always no representation is better than poor representation, so I just wish that they would like stay in their lane. And if you don't know how to do it, just don't do it.
I think if there had been more people, like more people of color represented in general, then it wouldn't be so bad. But definitely because he's the only one, it becomes really hard to, I don't know, to examine him and not see all of that too. And of course, the science is pretty Doctor Who-y, which I like in Doctor Who, but it was a little bit weird to see in Marvel. But I was kind of having that thought also about the women in the show, that like, we had Angie in season one and now she's just gone. And we don't really have any constant women in the show besides Peggy.
I also, it's annoying because I feel like there's a way to do this so much better. Like it's so, like for example, last episode, the one where they finally address his race and they like go to like a black jazz club. Nobody else speaks. He's still the only person of color to like speak in that episode. And then in this episode, like maybe we could meet like his sister or something, somebody who would care that he's dead. I just feel like there's ways to integrate more women. There's ways to integrate more people of color and have them organically have a role. To me also, like they keep talking about like, oh, but he's so smart. He's so smart. In some ways that is condescending to me. It's like, it's like when Netflix canceled the show One Day at a Time that I worked on. And they were like, oh, we realize how important this show was, but, you know, it just like, it wasn't getting the ratings, but I know that you're so grateful that we did this for you. Like, this is, this is how I feel watching this. It's so like, oh, but he's so smart. Aren't you so grateful? We gave you one of the good ones. Like, we gave you a smart, he's a scientist. It, like, it just feels so patronizing the way they're doing everything. But whatever, we'll move on.
No, I think that's valid. I know my first watch of this season of Agent Carter, I immediately wasn't really a fan of Wilkes, and I'm not sure if it's because I was kind of picking up on some of the things that you had mentioned, or if it was because I was kind of hung up on the ships that the show had already introduced, because that's kind of where I was at that moment in my life, was just like very much into just like the ships and stuff. But he's never really sat well with me either. And I have a terrible guilt complex in general. So I've always felt guilty about not liking him because I feel like I should. But he just kind of seems wet blankety. Like when he has that scene when Howard is like running around and asking for things, he's downplaying his abilities or like his intelligence. And it's kind of like, but also you're a scientist and you are kind of smart and this is science and you were studying the thing that did this to you and you're working with Howard Stark. Like, yes, this sucks. And yes, I'm sure you're very upset, but like you are capable, or so we've been told.
You're so right, Danielle. And that reminds me of something that made me angry in the last episode.
Sure.
Because you're so right. He should be like, okay, like Peggy, she's allowed to be angry that people don't understand how competent she is. And he's just like, you're right. He's just like, oh, oh. And like in the last episode, he's like, oh, well, Aes Sedain is so great because they're the only people who would hire someone like me. And he doesn't even say like a black man. He's just like, someone like me. Like, it's such a shameful thing. And you're right. I'm getting angrier now.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I always feel weird when there's a show like this and 99% of the people are white and yet no one is openly racist, like none of the good characters. Because, I mean, they're still, I don't know, when they were talking about how swanky the hotel was, I was like, I mean, there is still a lot of bias and I feel like we need to acknowledge that like everyone was, at the time and continues to be, affected by, you know, racist perceptions of these places. Are we just going to pretend that like Jarvis and Tony Stark were just casually hanging out at this jazz club and there was no consequence to that, and they haven't, you know, like there's consequences to you being someone who's trying to, you know, move beyond segregation. And if you, there's not really a middle ground where you can comfortably live in both worlds, you know, it's either you are kind of rejecting it, or if you are actively, you know, in conversation with people of color and you're kind of a part of this movement, then that should show as well. You know, we should, if Tony and Jarvis are Tony, I keep saying Tony, if Howard and Jarvis are in these circles and know people and are, you know, against segregation, then we should hear more about that or see more of their friends, more than them just being like, oh yeah, it's a nice place. There's a lot more that goes into it this time.
I'm really fine with none of our main characters being racist. I would prefer that because we know racism is bad now. And clearly everyone didn't back then, but that's still, like, that's a really hard ask audience to get over.
I didn't mean, like, the context should be there. Like, there should be more
people. Going to do that, I mean, because we don't want that, you need to do the opposite. Because this is not a time, and I'll say even now is not a time where you can just, you know, not talk about it. It's a pretty big deal for Peggy to be going into this space. And I don't think it should just be casually brushed off. Like, there's a lot of dynamics at play in every moment. And I feel like people just like to, I don't know, kind of gloss over it, which I get because it's not the focus of the show, but I think that's part of what goes into it feeling.
It's not, but it also makes the characters seem dumb. Like, very specifically, like, Wilkes to me was like, are you stupid? Like, what are you doing? Like, because, like, in the 1940s, maybe it's also because I just watched In the Dark, where the girl, it's like the 60s in LA, and she's like, she's half black, but she looks white, and she's dating a black guy, and they get like pulled over by the police all the time. But I was like, why are you being so aggressive about this and like flaunting? Like, you couldn't, you, this isn't things you could just very easily do, and you're acting like it's no big deal. Like, it's just making no sense and making you seem dumb. I just feel like you should have a little bit more self-preservation for yourself.
Yeah, so it kind of sounds like we're saying that the way in which they're presenting Wilkes's character and the discussion of race around him has been very isolated to just like a few occurrences, whereas it should be more of a through line with the actual culture around themselves. So like, we've only gotten the one outwardly racist person, or Wilkes is really the only one who's talking about his race and his background. Whereas perhaps while they were searching through Wilkes's house, perhaps some of that should have actually come up, like from other investigators, maybe not our main characters, but other investigators, or there should be more of that sort of feeling or knowledge of the fact that like this is going on, or even them, just some people around in the world acting like this is normal, especially when it comes to like the club of white dudes. It seems like there are pieces like specifically placed in certain parts of the series, parts of the episode, to be like, oh, we are talking about this, but those pieces are very isolated. Does that kind of...
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, it really reminds me of Doctor Who again, because that was kind of something that was happening with Doctor Who for a long time, that there were certain things that were acknowledged, but then just kind of brushed off, especially with Martha. And I feel like this last season did a very good job of trying to bring together the science fiction aspect with racial dynamics and different moments in history. So I really wonder if this show would have done it better if it had been done like this year. but I mean, who knows? I think it's still a learning curve, for everyone to try and, you know, make this fun, but also make it realistic.
To be better.
Yeah. And it's very interesting that, you know, we have to acknowledge the bad things for the show to actually do its characters justice. Which is, I don't know, it's very interesting that a show is kind of less enjoyable when we don't acknowledge those things, because, I don't know, it's such an important part of so many people's lives.
Karen, did you have any thoughts about Wilkes, or has your opinion on him or perception of him changed in any way from the first time you watched Agent Carter to this time?
I mean, I feel like now I am more aware of these issues, having just like lived in the world and taken in a lot more media and kind of come to a better understanding. I still like him. I think that he's a good person and a kind one. And I really like, I like his silly, goofy attitude and his excitement when he's around science and everything like that. But everything you guys are saying is absolutely true, and it's very frustrating. And I think the thing that's most frustrating for me is that this show has an agenda, and its agenda is feminism. This whole show is about showing Peggy is as capable, if not more capable, than all of the men around her. It knows that it's fighting an uphill battle, and Wilkes's story is not unrelated to that. There's a lot of threads that they share, both in like the feminism stuff and the racism stuff. It is similar. And for them to do such a disservice to him while trying to fight Peggy's battles is like, I don't think it's necessarily a step backwards in terms of Peggy's story and what they're trying to do there, but it's like, how do you not see what you're doing here, and like, how are you not doing this better? And I don't know, maybe they didn't have time or anything, but if you're going to write this story, you got to make time for that.
Well put, Karen.
Yeah, well thanks. Said.
I got really angry at the end. Like, I was like gesticulating wildly.
You're like, he's so great. He's so great. But also I hate everything. Yeah.
I do. But I do. I really want to like him because I think he's a good foundation for a good character, but the execution is not anywhere near what I actually want it to be.
Or where it should be. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I think we've spent a substantial amount of time on Wilkes, so I do want to move on. But he's definitely someone to be watching as we move forward here. And I'm interested to learn how, if at all, opinions about him change. Because, I mean, he's going to be around for a little bit longer, at least as far as we can tell, because Howard is going to Peru to get some help from a former mentor, I believe, which is sad. We're going to say bye to Howard, but everything else is going to stay pretty much the same. Hopefully he'll be back soon. And in the meantime, I mean, Peggy and Jarvis are still going to stay at that one house. And they're still going to live their lives. For instance, Sousa figures out that Whitney Frost was originally a scientist. So Peggy has no problem going to interrogate her now that she kind of knows that she is more on a level with Whitney Frost than she realized, that she had even underestimated Whitney. And I mean, Ariana, you put it in the doc, and I love this point in here. Like, no wonder she wants to quit acting and like not be around all these people who keep putting her down for her appearance and her age and all of these things. Or like her husband is telling her, when I win this election, you know, we're going to move to DC and you can just be a stay-at-home mom and it's going to be great. Like, explicitly knowing now that she is a scientist makes all of these other things more frustrating. And we've kind of seen elements of Whitney come out in different moments. Like, we've seen this scientific part of her come out in different moments, but never had an actual label for it. And so I find her interaction with Peggy in this episode, as well as Whitney Frost's interaction with all of the other people, like her husband and her director, I think, really interesting. Yeah, for sure. That hug was just very, very hard to take. But does this development on the behalf of like Whitney Frost's character make her more interesting, or does it feel off? I'm interested to see how she lands with everybody.
I like her a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. I think I like her more than Dottie, because I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I can relate to her. She's also a horrible person, so I won't be too upset when she gets defeated.
That's not why you relate to her, though, right?
No. No. But, like, I can see, I'm interested when I see her on screen, and the actress is really good. You really feel for her, and you want to see what she's up to, and I'm really curious about what she's going to do now, because she's also scared, which is an interesting combination, to be evil and scared. So I really wonder what's going to happen. I really like her.
I wouldn't say I like her more than Dottie. I like both of them. But what I do like is I feel like they learned from their mistakes last season, in that I feel like she's gotten a lot more character development than Dottie did. Like, Dottie's was all kind of like jam-packed at the end.
Yeah.
And I like that they've started with her from the beginning and are slowly giving us these nuggets.
Yeah, Nassim, when you said she's a bit more relatable, I think that's absolutely true. She seems a bit more like a human being. Dottie is very much like just this, you know, super secret spy whose only goal in life is to defeat Peggy. And she seems, I don't necessarily want to call her one-dimensional, but she definitely has like a one-track mind. Whereas I feel like Whitney is a little more well-rounded. And I think she's pretty interesting. I don't hate her, which is weird because she clearly is the driving force of everything bad that's going on in this season so far. But there's something about her that's like, I can empathize with her frustrations in being called old. And like, I'm sorry, she does not have wrinkles around her eyes. Like, she is stunningly beautiful. And she's so incredibly smart. And she's had to sort of put that to the side for one reason or another. And I want better for her. And I kind of wish she wasn't going about it in the way that she is, which is interesting.
Yes, exactly.
One of the things that I really enjoy about both her and Dottie is the way in which they serve as foils for Peggy. In different ways, both of these women are kind of like a one bad day or one significant like difference in life from Peggy, and that's how they turn out. For instance, like Dottie is, she grew up in the Red Room, and like that's why she's just as motivated as Peggy, and she like wants a lot of similar things that we saw at the end of the season. She wants a lot of similar things that Peggy does, but like she had her start in the Red Room. Or like Whitney Frost, her sort of one bad day or like different start is that she was interested in science and didn't have a way into that. So she had to compromise and go into acting. And like that kind of affected the way that she grew. But otherwise, she's just as capable and intelligent and resourceful as Peggy is. It's just like that one thing that completely changed the trajectory. I don't want to say too much more about like kind of how Peggy got her start, but like Peggy was able to join the SSR and use her brain and use her like spy skills and all these sorts of things. Whereas Whitney Frost made the cover of a scientific magazine, but wasn't really able to go forward from that. And so I do like the way that they kind of play off of the fact that they're on Peggy's level, but they just had like one or two different aspects different in the way back when that made them who they are now. But I guess one difference is that Peggy may or may not ever absorb people and be slightly okay with it or more okay with it than maybe I would. I mean, I know we were all kind of waiting for Whitney Frost to do something to the man who was hugging her very disgustingly, but I'm assuming people were taken aback by the fact that she absorbed the guy. Was that slightly alarming to people? And then the fact that her scar expanded a little bit more. How are we feeling about this?
That's terrifying. Also, I was like, who is she? Like, who would you even talk to about it?
Right? Can't talk to her husband.
No.
It's like she's a human black hole. I really don't know what would happen. I mean, she does own a lab. Well, not anymore, I guess. But she owns a company. She could just get people to work on her. But that's probably not what she's going to do. She's probably going to run for it.
You think she's going to run?
Yeah. I mean, I don't see what else she could do. She could just continue as normal. But then she'll like accidentally suck in her husband or something. I don't know. Maybe that's going to happen. She's already tried to pretend that there wasn't a problem. And yet here we are. So I think the next step is to act like there is a problem.
I don't know why, but I really love how she manipulates her husband.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but like between her just seamlessly lying to him about nothing being wrong and him just being like, okay, to her like fake crying and getting him to like take a hit out on Peggy, which obviously I'm not rooting for, but also I just like that she clearly, I guess this is it. She clearly is the power in that relationship. And I don't think he knows it, but she knows it. And that's kind of badass.
Oh yeah. He has no idea at all.
I don't understand why he thinks his wife is so stupid. When doesn't he, like, she created their company, didn't she?
Either that, or she is really good at coming up with the ideas, but making her husband think that he came up with the idea. You know, like that sort of Inception-like thing.
Yeah.
Because she's probably super aware that her saying something is not going to hold the same weight as him saying something. And that kind of bites her in the ass in the end. Like, that's kind of the reason why she is where she is now. But at the same time, if she wants something done, if that's more important than getting the credit, then she's kind of been doing what she's wanted.
Also, we know that when she was a scientist, like, Whitney Frost is not her given name, that she had another name. So am curious as to whether or not her husband knows about her past in that way too, and then just decides to forget it, or it seems like he's completely ignorant and she just keeps pulling strings. But I think, Karen, you mentioned it, and this is kind of one of the last things that I would like to talk about, and that is that scene where Peggy is doing like a night workout, which watching this episode at night kind of motivated me to do the same, but then I just went to bed instead.
Start my life.
You know, it's fine. I'll get it later this week. It's whatever. But that scene where she's doing that workout and then all of a sudden has to fend off an assassin, basically, who's trying to suffocate her and choke her and then drown her and all of these sorts of things. How did this fight scene play for people? We get to see a little bit more of her being resourceful, which was interesting. But also, I feel like I was more alarmed for Peggy in this fight or in this attack than I ever have been previously.
I will say once she falls into the pool, I was like, that's like 10 times more dangerous and scary.
Because he could drown her?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe that's just because that's like a fear of mine. I'm like, no, stay away from the pool.
Are you projecting?
Yes.
I think the look on her face after everything is said and done, after she gets a couple shots off at him and the assassin runs away, like her face visibly falls from alert and like in the moment to almost petrified. And the way that Jarvis kind of picks her up off the ground and she holds on to him, it's not, that is probably one of the least romantic and more friendship-like embraces or shows of support that I've ever seen on television. And I loved every moment of it. But like, you can tell she's visibly shaken.
Yeah, they were really clinging to each other. But you're right, it like didn't hold anything other than, oh my God, we kind of both almost just died. and yeah, I liked that. I just like that they're always there for each other. It's so lovely.
Friendship gold.
And then she walks around with the burn mark from being almost strangled. She just walks around with it for the rest of the episode.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Oh, if you go back and look, like she has the bruise or whatever. Aww. I think Jarvis maybe kind of looks at it that next morning. But nobody else remarks on it. Like this was maybe 2/3 of the way through the episode. So she still saw like Wilkes and I think even Howard after or
it's
something.
It's just Peggy. She got into another scrap. It's fine.
Oh my God. But also she got really close to being strangled. So maybe someone should ask. I think that was basically it for this episode. Was there anything else in this episode that you wanted to, that anyone wanted to bring up that we haven't discussed yet?
Yes, we didn't talk about how, I mean, I guess it's more for next episode, but at the end, Jack goes to the club and he realizes that Peggy was right.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm sorry. I can't believe I skipped that. Let's talk about that.
I won't let you forget about Jack.
I know you won't. I'm really happy and better for it. So he goes to this club with Vernon Masters, and their exchange is really concerning. Like, we knew he was shifty previously, Vernon Masters, not Jack, but this kind of really puts it out in the open almost as much as like a threat. And you can see the wheels in Jack's mind kind of turning here. Do we think he's going to go back to Peggy and Sousa and be like, hey, I'm sorry you guys were right. Let's do it your way. Or do you think he's going to stew on it a little bit more?
He's not going to say I'm sorry. That's for sure.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I hope he does the right thing. I mean, I saw in this episode, he does give him the evidence, but he also lies and says that he didn't watch it. So he's also holding something back from Vernon. So it seems like his intuition, at least, is leading him in the right direction in terms of not fully trusting him. But he's being so dumb this season. Like, who knows what he's going to do?
And I guess there's no better place than the Arena Club for this conversation. Like, they can just have it out in the open, and it doesn't matter because everyone else there is super shifty as well, which is so alarming to me. But I guess that's how these things go. Okay. Well, it seems like we are about to wrap up this episode, but before we do, I do want to get into favorite scenes and favorite lines. because it's one of my favorite parts of these episodes every time. So my favorite scene is when Peggy and Jarvis go to talk to Howard for the first time, and we see Howard for the first time in the season, but they walk in on Howard's shot and we don't know it's Howard yet, but he's just trying to yell at him to like get out of the shot. And so they just not so effectively try to slink away. And it just made me laugh both times because obviously they weren't doing enough, but the way in which they were moving together was really funny.
Friendship goals.
Friendship goals. 100%. Karen/Jarvis, your favorite scene, please.
My favorite scene was when Peggy teases Howard with the Bloody Mary. Because
who's a good boy?
Yeah, her relationship with him is so interesting. And I feel like she simultaneously admonishes him, but kind of like gives into him at the same time. And she walks a really interesting line with him because she doesn't, I mean, she does judge him for his behavior sometimes, but I think she's also very aware that he's not a bad person and she still cares a lot about him. And just in this moment, she's like, you are absolutely ridiculous, but I really need your help. So let's go. And it was just hilarious.
She talks about him like he's her very annoying little brother that mm-hmm. she has to put up with, but also loves. Mm-hmm. But what are you going to do about him?
Yep. I think she even had a conversation with Wilkes in this episode where she was like, oh, he's so gross, but he's also very smart and a loyal friend and all of these things, which is really nice insight into how she and Howard get along because they are very different people.
It's also, when you were talking about how platonic her hug with Jarvis was, it is really nice to see like these two men together, how they both treat Peggy so platonically, like especially Howard, who is such a womanizer. Mm-hmm. Like he totally 100% respects her on her own as a person. Like he doesn't even really flirt with her.
And not only is it platonic, but it's very emotional. Both of them have no problem admitting how much they love her and how much they would go to the ends of the earth for her. And those two things combined, you just don't really see, like, one, between men and women on screen, and two, from men being that emotional and also not wanting to get into the woman's pants. I love it so much. It's so good.
Like Howard in this episode doesn't even like joke to Jarvis that he's going to leave him for Peggy. Doesn't he say that?
Oh yeah. Let me know if I need to find another butler.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I know I'm fun, but she's great too.
Yeah.
But then Jarvis was like, no, I love you both.
Why not both?
Yeah. Why not both? Okay. Ariana, your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is when Jack first shows up because I was like, yes, he's back. But also I just love how he's like, hey, best friends. And they're so like, no.
Shut it down. I love that too. I do miss, I like them being in California, but I do miss these moments with the three of them.
They just have such a weird dynamic that is very much like sibling rivalry where they're all kind of like competing against each other, but they like each other, but also they like keep things from each other.
It's so interesting to watch. I'm glad that you're enjoying it. It makes me happy. And Nassim, your favorite scene?
I just love his Howard's very scientific wine bottle method when he was making things float around Peggy.
Oh yeah.
He was just like, ah, let's try with a very expensive wine. It made me laugh probably more than it should have. I enjoyed it a lot.
Should have used a cheaper one. I liked that too. Good call. And now favorite lines. Mine is, it's from Sousa, and he goes, come on, it's a strategic scientific reserve. In terms of, I think they were asking if like they knew something about science. I don't remember, but I picked out this line because it's very directly related to a lot of the conversations that we've had. The fact that like none of these people go through any sort of like scientific processes, or like they don't know anything about science, but they work for the SSR. So I enjoyed this time around Sousa calling this out.
I also liked that it was sort of, you know, they didn't expect him to know something. And he's like, guys, like, yeah, that's why I'm here, because yeah, I know stuff.
Oh, boy. Karen, your favorite line, which is also why I called you Jarvis previously.
Because my favorite line is when Jarvis is setting up the security system, and then when somebody like opens the door, he says like, "You're not supposed to be in here," and Peggy's like, "Oh, that's terrifying," and Jarvis says, "I have no desire to spend the rest of time as a disembodied voice." I remember when I first watched this, this gave me such intense feelings. I cried, and I just like, it's a lot, you guys. As a Tony fan, and as, you know, loving Jarvis, just as Jarvis, let alone what Jarvis turns into, this is a lot, and it's very sad.
I didn't find it sad. I thought it was really cute. But I guess if you really didn't want to, then it would be sad.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice that, like, his legacy kind of lives on beyond him. But to know that he's, I don't really want to say reduced to, because Jarvis is incredibly intelligent AI. Like, it's kind of amazing. But I don't know. I just...
It's a body, though, at some point.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't spend the rest of time as a disembodied voice, but he does spend some time as a disembodied voice. I just remember it hitting me really hard. Maybe I'm the only one.
You're probably the only one, but also I remember it hitting you very hard as well.
Yeah.
I do remember that. Ariana, hit us with your favorite line or lines.
My favorite line, once again, is of course Peggy's burn to Jack, because he deserves it. And it's when she tells him, "You're doing what you always do, burying an ugly truth and hoping someone will pin a medal on you."
Ooh, yeah.
His face. It was great.
That was like maybe below the belt, but also
it was so
like,
below the belt.
But also like
not undeserved.
Well, also, didn't the Vernon guy pretty much say, "You deserve another medal for this"? And I was like, oh God, yes. How many medals is this guy gonna get by just being like very dishonest?
But all it's so funny that Peggy, like, she does go below the belt so often. Like, she did it in the interrogation. Like, she's like, she hits them where it hurts. And that was kind of messed up, because he told her that in confidence. But he's being messed up right now, so.
I also really liked when she calls him out on, like, how Dottie threw the table on him.
Yeah. Rearranging furniture on his sternum.
Yeah. That was a little less below the belt, but also just as deserved.
But also, like, who is the one that called up Peg and told
right?
her about that?
I was thinking about that. She's got a spy.
She's got a friend. All of those people fawning over Peg, they're probably missing her. So they're calling her up with the latest gossip from the New York office. I'd be here for that.
Yes.
That and,
and an honorable mention to Jack. What an appalling surprise. I missed you too, Marge.
Oh. So good. Thank you. And Nassim, your favorite line.
"But they're ready for a movie based on a comic book? Sounds like a dreadful idea." I laughed so hard.
I wrote that one down too. That was my number two.
That hits particularly hard because Endgame just came out and it's been like 10 years of all this stuff.
And no one thought it could be done. And it was just saying what everyone thought.
Yep, it's great. All right, so those were our opinions, favorite scenes, and favorite lines for this episode, and we want to hear what you have to say. We want to hear whether you agree, disagree, all of that good stuff. So please get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can join our Facebook group, Rewatchables Rewinders. We're always talking about our current episodes in there, as well as Agent Carter-related things or anything related to previous shows that we've already covered. So please come join us over there. It's like a direct tie to all of us, where you can speak to us pretty much whenever you want to. We would also love it if you left us a review on iTunes. Reviews on iTunes will help our show get seen by other people and help build up basically the love for Peggy, the love for Jack and Sousa and all of that good stuff. There is no downside to leaving an iTunes review. And if you leave us a 5-star review, then Karen will be your beautiful disembodied voice. So honestly, like, you only have things to gain from leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes.
Although I guess, Karen, you're already our beautiful disembodied voice.
I was just going to say, I kind of don't have to do anything for this one because you're listening to the podcast.
This is supposed to be an incentive.
I will send you personal messages.
She will be the voice for your home security system.
Yes.
How's that?
Nobody would be afraid.
You'd be like, okay, guys, maybe don't go in there, though. I don't have the energy to deal with you right now.
Too real, Danielle.
I love you so much, and I want you to have my own security system. All right, so before we wrap up today, let's get into some listener feedback that we've had on some previous episodes. Again, because we've had some technical issues with both the podcast episodes for season 2, episodes 1 and 2, we're a little bit limited here, but we do have some feedback to go through. And let's see. Naseem, would you get this first tweet, please?
Yep. Rachel says, only on episode 4 and loving Agent Carter.
Makes me so happy.
She's ahead of us. Oh, I guess.
She's behind.
Oh, she's behind. Okay.
She's behind. Ooh, so she'll get to catch up in a few weeks. And then she'll know we heard her.
Surprise. So shout out to Rachel.
Keep loving it until season 2 so you can hear us now reading.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, please don't stop.
Please don't stop.
All right. And Karen, would you like to get this tweet from Amy, please?
Yes. Amy W. at Rockin' Librarian says, Jarvis is the Samwise Gamgee of the show is an accurate and wonderful observation that has just made me very happy. Thank you. I did not say that, but you're welcome.
Who said this?
I don't remember.
I listened to that episode and I don't remember this happening. But that is a great observation.
Maybe it's from a previous episode.
It would be from like the season finale or something.
Yeah.
I feel like I was on this episode and I can't
remember. You were on this episode. Totally would have said that. And so was Karen, I think.
Was I?
Yeah, because you saw me ugly cry, right?
No, I saw you ugly cry because we were watching 201 together.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay, Amy W., tell us what episode this happened in. So
we need to know who should get credit for this.
Ourselves.
Yeah.
We can feel very snobby and proud of ourselves.
Exactly, but also... thank you. We're glad that we made you happy. All right. Last item for today. It's now time for Ariana's assumptions and Naseem's narrative for season 2, episode 4, Smoke and Mirrors. Let's hear what you got.
Well, I feel like this has to do with what's her face, Whitney Frost, because she looks in the mirror because she's an actress a lot. I'm not good at this. Where's Mitch? Jeez. Naseem, you go.
Okay. Okay, I think, I already said this, but I think Whitney's just gonna run for it or do some, she's either gonna go crazy or gonna run for it, and I think she's gonna run for it. And so they're gonna be trying to track down this black hole of a person. And I think Jack is going to pay, he has to pay. I'm sorry, I don't like him. I don't like him at all. And I think Smoke and Mirrors is what Vernon and his people are pulling on Jack, and he's gonna end up being in a really bad situation because he collaborated with them.
Yes, he probably will be in a bad situation, but he's gonna have to learn from his mistakes, Naseem, because this is a TV show and it's not real life.
Oh, God.
Like, I cannot say this enough. I'm tired of the people in my Twitter mentions being like, he's Hydra. Like, shut up. This is not real life, but he has to have a character arc.
He had a character arc in season 1, and this season it's like he's forgotten it completely.
Yes, because they regressed him, because clearly they're not doing the best things with their characters, as we discussed.
Oh boy.
Yeah, but that's on him.
That he's already proven that he's a good person, so he has to just get there again, because clearly they can't follow through on their arcs. Or maybe they just thought they were only going to get one season.
Or he just... got distracted by a shiny metal in front, like dangled in front of him.
No, it's bad because at the end of season 1, Jack had a chance to continue with what he and Peggy had. They'd established this equality. They had like a good friendship going. And then he took the credit for everything, which already undermined his.
Okay. He did take the credit, which
and
was.
Now in season two, he's just getting worse.
This was never addressed. And I feel like I did want to address it. At the end, he does take the credit. And someone who is altruistic would say, no, really, the work was Peggy's. But if you remember, kind of part of the reason they're in the mess in the first place is because Peggy literally betrayed her country. And they just let her back in and didn't throw her under the bus. So number one, that's nice. But also he was the lead and like he was the lead, the chief of the team. So technically the credit does go to him. It's nice when he gives it to his underlings, but he doesn't have to because he's the chief.
Was he the why is he?
Yes, he was the chief because the other chief had died. So he became the new chief.
And if he does something like truly amazing this season, then I will forgive him because I do like the idea of, you know, I really love that whole episode where he admitted the terrible truth about his past. Like, that is Jack at his best. That is who I want. I don't want this right now.
He is a good person and a selfish person because people contain multitudes. And right now, he's probably our only layered character.
Okay, we'll see.
I'm sorry. I like everyone else, but everyone else is very one note. They are just straight up good guys. And so I think it's a little bit ridiculous when people are like, no, he's just bad. Like, characters are supposed to be multi-layered because people are multi-layered.
He is. He definitely is. But there comes a point where, like, it's not like, oh, it's so easy. Like, he can just change. Like, oh, I'm so sorry I did this. And, you know, like, he is messing up on a very, like, turning over that piece of film really, really undermined all his growth and really puts him as a very, very bad chief of the SSR. So
it does make him a bad chief of the SSR. But also right now he's acting based on fear in that he thinks the SSR is going down, which we know is a fact it is. and he's giving it to the FBI, he thinks, not like a foreign agency. Is he doing the right thing? No, I don't think so. It just makes me mad when people are like, it's better, we should all root against Jack. No, he's one of our good guys. I'm sorry. I have my own things that I'm dealing with outside.
It's fine.
I want people to stop. Don't mention me on Twitter unless you're saying something nice. Leave me alone.
Oh gosh. Okay. Well, with that, hopefully there will be some nice things to talk to you about for Smoke and Mirrors, but we won't know that until next week. So this is the end of our episode for now. So we'll talk to you next week. I'm Danielle.
I'm Karen.
I'm Ariana.
And I'm Nassim. Let's hope Whitney doesn't swallow everyone into a black hole next episode.
Fingers crossed. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
If you're going to come visit my house, bring cookies. Don't bring cockroaches.